We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about Algeria. Algeria's struggle for independence from France was long and bloody, but once it ended in 1962, for a while at least, Algeria, as far as the rest of the world was concerned, was mostly forgotten. It did return to the headlines in the late 90s as a savage conflict between the army and Islamist guerrillas took the lives of 200,000 people. It's also been in the news recently because of political unrest, and people have looked at that and also the unrest going on in the neighboring country of Tunisia and asks whether the rioting that's taken place in both countries is somehow linked. Does it say something about the prospects for reform or demand for political reform in North Africa? In this part of Focus, we'll be talking with an historian who has spent a lot of time looking at French colonial history and also contemporary Algerian history. His name is James Lesueur. He teaches history at University of Nebraska, Lincoln, is the author of the book Between Terror and Democracy, which looks at Algeria since 1989. That book is recently out. We'll talk a little bit about that, some of his other work, and questions from people who are listening, of course, as always, are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send along a comment by email, you can do that too. The address is will-talk, so W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. And Professor Lesueur, hello.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks very much. We certainly appreciate it. Well, you know, sometimes topics come about in unusual ways, and I guess that something that caught our attention having to do with Algeria was the fact that right at the moment, there are two films causing some stir in France, and they're both movies about Algeria. One is about the War of Independence. The other is about events that took place during the Civil War. And interestingly enough, both of them are in the running for Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. And I guess two things, it makes me think of a couple of things. One is that as far as Algeria is concerned and the rest of the world is concerned, there seem to be these periodic, although widely spaced, spikes of interest. As far as the French are concerned, though, I'm not sure if they've ever really stopped thinking about Algeria. At least that experience with them all these years after independence is still pretty raw. Maybe just you could say a couple of things about how it is that people in France continue to think about what was their colonial experience there in Algeria.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I'd like to just start with the question of the film.
Yeah,
I think it's important to point out that both of these are works of art, as works of art, they address the both contemporary and past history of Algeria, and the French and Algerian relations in specific ways. But I think again, it's important to point out they're works of art, and I would argue that it's through the works of art that you see most of these dialogues now. It's not necessarily the state-to-state relations that make it interesting. It's the artistic endeavors on the part of writers, musicians, filmmakers, etc., to address both the colonial past and the ongoing issues in the present. And I find that actually one of the most compelling parts of this story as it's emerged in this discussion about how these two films either are accurate or inaccurate portrayals of past crimes or ongoing conflicts.
And I suppose it is indeed worth making the point. I'm sure that people in France make the point that these films, they're dramas, they're not documentaries. So I'm sure questions have been raised about just how it is that they discuss both of these things, both the War of Independence and then the more recent Civil War.
Yeah, I think, the film about the monks, which is about the kidnapping and then eventually execution of the Trappist monks, that was actually based on a historical book by a colleague and friend of mine, John Kaiser. Mm-hmm. That book is an historical account. There are liberties taken, obviously, between the transition between a work of historical import and then the move to cinematic representation in a film. But I think, nevertheless, it's still based on a book, and it's kind of important to point that out. The other one, I don't believe, is actually based on an historical account. It's more of a kind of an action drama film, mm-hmm. portraying the actions during liberation. And from what I gather, part of the protest against that film has to do with the representations of violence, which really cuts at the heart of the ongoing discussions between the French and Algerians over the War of Independence, and then the way the violence played out in the 1990s and then up through the present. The question of violence remains central to the relationship between France and Algeria, probably unfortunately, but it nevertheless is a reality.
Mm. Perhaps you should talk we could talk a long time about the history of Algeria. We could do an entire program about the War of Independence. We could do an entire program about the Civil War. But just so people have just a little bit of a background, I guess we should make the point that indeed Algeria was a French colony. It was considered to be part of France. During that time that it was administered by France, a lot of French people moved there, became part of the population, and that then there was indeed a protracted and bloody War for Independence lasted from 1954 until 1962. A lot of people died, and that's something that, as I say, it's still feelings about it, I'm sure, on both sides are still pretty raw. You talk just a little bit about French colonial Algeria, and then we can go on and talk a little bit about the War for Independence.
Sure. I think that most historians who have looked at this, the colonial question, have come up with a couple of phrases. One of the most popular ones to describe that time period is total war. These are historians who have looked at the way that the French colonial experience played out in North Africa, and I think that's a view that most historians embrace, which is to say, essentially, that the total war is in the Napoleonic era essentially moved from Europe to North Africa. And by that I mean specifically after 1830, after the French attacked Algiers and began to enter into a military conflict, it pursued a policy which I think today we would argue is tantamount to human rights violations. And it pursued a long-standing policy to fairly, I think most historians would say, to exterminate the local populations, at least in terms of resistance, to annihilate all forms of resistance. And it was able to do so. And at the same time, there were heroic figures who emerged, and one of those figures that John Kizer has actually addressed is a man named Abdelkader, the Emir Abdelkader. And actually, John Kizer has a book that he's just published recently about this. And the emir was able to lead a resistance which basically undid the French military efforts for a number of years. Eventually, he was subdued. He laid down arms. during the conflict, he organized a jihad, was able to mount substantial resistance to French occupation. But eventually, he was defeated in 1870, and then he was en route to being transferred to the Middle East because that was one of the conditions of surrender. And the French reneged on the promises during the 1848 revolution and then put him in prison. And it was actually Louis-Napoleon Bonaparte, Napoleon III, who released him from prison. And then he went on to Syria and Lebanon to live out the rest of his life. And that experience, that initial experience with French colonialism in Algeria really soured most Algerians because it was, as most historians agree, a total war to annihilate all forms of intellectual and cultural resistance to the French occupational forces. And then after that, by the 1950s, by the time the War of Independence began, the French continued to settle Algeria. It eventually became three French overseas provinces that were tantamount to other French provinces, which made it essentially, it wasn't a colonial enterprise anymore, it was actually France.
Mm-hmm.
It was France overseas. It was different. It was administrated differently than any of the other colonial possessions at the time, because it was administrated through the Minister of Interior and not the Minister of Colonies. So there are a number of things that make it substantially different. So when the war broke out in 54, the War of Independence, there were roughly a million European settlers who were there. It was the largest French colonial possession of its kind, or a colonial space of its kind. And it became part and parcel with France. Algeria did. And when the war broke out, it was an incredibly violent war, as you know, and most historians have written about. And the violence was in the extreme. As such, it came to kind of represent in the period of decolonization one of the most important conflicts of the time, because it meant to undo one of the biggest empires, in fact, the second largest empire in the world, the French Empire, and turn it on its head. But again, the FLN, when it emerged, it pursued a pretty rigorous violence, a rigorous policy of violence. And it conducted, like the French had before, a total war against its own population, which meant that it allowed for no resistance, no kind of divisions. It would stand no internal criticism and so on and so forth. And it eradicated other Algerian rival nationalist groups, such as Messali Haja's group, the MNA. Other rival nationalist groups were eliminated by the FLN in order to kind of consolidate and buttress its own legitimacy. And that's part of the debate about these contemporary films, because they get at some of these questions about the degree to which the FLN itself was a hegemonic force and eradicated any form of opposition within its own borders. And that's a very, very heated debate in French colonial history, and obviously in the Algerian historiography as well.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things I think it's probably important for people to understand when they think about the significance of the War for Independence is that, as far as the French were concerned, it was even more than a colony demanding independence. It was as if part of France decided to secede. It shook France to its very core. So that's why it's maybe so important to the French. But one also has to acknowledge how important it is, maybe to the end of the colonial project itself,
right,
viewed broadly.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people, you know, when I started working in Algeria in the 1990s, which is basically about the same time the Civil War emerged in 1992, or if you want to call it the Civil War. Some people call it the War on Civilians. The issue at hand in the early 1990s was, you know, how did Algeria live from 1962 to 1992, and what were the things that the FLN did put in place that basically augmented the conflict that emerged in the 1990s. And one of the things that most people argue is that the FLN, because it fought for independence in the way that it did, a number of things come out of that. And one of the things, when you talk about the end of empire, it really did. A lot of people, a lot of other nationalist groups looked at what the FLN was doing and drew from the FLN inspiration. And that's also because in the French colonial world, a lot of the people, including the celebrated nationalist propagandist or theorist Frantz Fanon, was involved in the conflict. And Frantz Fanon's book, The Wretch of the Earth, became the symbol, if you will, of anti-colonial resistance, and set the tone of the debate about the legitimacy of violence within other nationalist frameworks themselves. And that eventually was even adopted by, as you know, the Black Power movement in the U.S. and so on and so forth. And that really set the tone for how nationalists would try to set up both the post-colonial state, but also organized resistance and tried to legitimate violence during the period of decolonization. But in the context of imperialism, the Algerian War really does stand out as one of the hallmark wars of anti-colonial resistance.
Yeah.
And it really set the tone for what would happen in Africa, in other parts of the Middle East, et cetera.
And this, it's the thing that's very interesting to you, but it also is a fascinating example of the significant role that that writers and other people of letters can play in these kind of movements.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that drew me to study the conflict, because I'm an intellectual and cultural historian. So I was fascinated by both the French efforts to deal with this in analysis and literature, et cetera, and also the Algerians. So I work on both Algerian intellectual history and French intellectual history. And in that context, I think that one of the things that you can really see that's striking about the Algerian case and the colonial experiences in Algeria is that it did produce a substantial literature that actually is probably, arguably, the most important literature of the era of decolonization. Most of the really important works that were published by French intellectuals dealt with French colonialism. Sartre, de Beauvoir, Camus, etc. These were the people who were, for one reason or another, drawn into that conflict, or in Camus' case, tried to stay out of it. And at the same time, you know, it did create a literature and an art that dealt with the question of violence, colonialism, and those kinds of questions. And I think that's a really important facet of the ongoing debate, because if you notice, some of the discussions that occur in France today have to do with the role of the intellectuals. And also with regard to the Algerian case, intellectuals play a very important role for pushing the debate forward for reform in Algeria. It's unfortunate that most of those intellectuals are in exile, because the political system in Algeria is such that it kind of fosters a desire to go into exile, not in addition to the extremist forces that pushed intellectuals into exile in the 1990s.
Let me just quickly introduce our guest, James LeSueur. He's professor of history at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He's a scholar who's interested in French colonial history and also contemporary Algerian history. And we're talking about Algeria and a little bit about its modern history, at least from independence on. We'll talk a little bit about current events as well. Questions are welcome, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And the email is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, just again, we're skating over fairly quickly some involved history, but we did at least talk a little bit about the war for independence from France, and the fact that there was this war that was waged by a number of groups, but primarily by this group, the National Liberation Front, also known as its initials, the FLN. So they were the prime group leading the fight against the French, and then they went on to become the ruling party in Algeria. And it seems that really, one didn't really hear very much about Algeria almost from that point, really, up until the events where we had the election in the early 90s, very early 90s, where there was a win by an Islamic party, and then the government annulled the elections. And so we have now we have a civil war going on in Algeria. Maybe just you want to talk just a little bit more about Algeria in between those two things, say like from 1962 to 1991. What's important to know about what happened in Algeria during those years?
Well, that's a good question. I think one of the things that the FLN was trying to do, remember that when the French left Algeria, they left it a mess. So eventually in the summer of 1962, basically 1 million French citizens leave. They were given the choice that they could stay in Algeria, but they would have had to accept an Algerian passport, and that was something that was unacceptable to most French. So most people left, and when they left, they often burned the buildings, they destroyed the libraries, they basically destroyed all the forms of communication, all the things that you need to survive in a modern world. And so the Algerian government had to reconstruct that and do it quickly. It also had to build education. It had to reassess its identity. And one of the things that's striking about that period is a couple of things begin to emerge. The Arabization programs that Ben Bala and then after he was thrown, Boumediene put in place. And so Arabization becomes one of the mechanisms for creating a national identity. And that's, again, really a topic of debate among a lot of people. It also tried to, you know, it industrialized pretty quickly. It tried to follow a model of other nations that were emerging from colonial conflicts and colonial wars, and it socialized its economy. It industrialized. It destroyed its agricultural production as a result of that because they didn't have necessarily the best agricultural policies or foresight, so they moved a lot of people off farms and into factories in that period. And then what's really striking about it is a couple of things begin to emerge. The War of Independence, at the end of it, is around 8 million. And today it's roughly some 30 million. So the population booms. And so what's one of the things that's really significant, very important, is the growth of the population. And the unexpected growth then triggered urbanization. So you have a population boom, urbanization, and then higher forms of educational institutions begin to spread. So that means that more people are going to school to get education, but there is no economic structure to give them jobs after they graduate. So by the 1980s, you begin to have real serious unemployment. You begin to have substantial unrest. The Arabization programs led to critique by the Berbers, which are roughly 20% of the population, because Arabization was celebrating one part of the Algerian identity, the Arab part, but then there's the Berber part, and most Berbers felt neglected for obvious reasons. So they were beginning to see, you begin to see tensions within several aspects of the postcolonial era. And I call this historical postcolonialism, not in theory. I think it's interesting to talk about the theoretical moments and theoretical issues, but I think it's more interesting to talk about what's actually happening, the historical problems that emerge after postcolonialism. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, what you can see clearly is unemployment, urbanization, overpopulation. These kinds of things really begin to affect the Algerian economy. And then when the oil infrastructure begins to collapse because the hydrocarbon sections in Algeria invested heavily in oil. And after the oil collapse in the mid-1980s, its entire economic system was set up basically to live off its oil reserves. And when that collapses, all of its socialist programs collapse as well. And that really causes tremendous chaos in Algeria in the 1980s. And so by 1988, just like in Tunisia today, you see a massive call for reform. People go out into the streets. They basically ask for an end to the one-party state. Most of these people in the streets didn't experience the War of Liberation. They were too young. And they didn't have that kind of memory of the fight against the French. And they weren't willing to swallow and buy the program of the FLN anymore. So in 1988, there were significant calls for reform. The government sends out the military. It shoots and basically, most people would argue, massacres up to 500 civilians in October of 1988. That then triggers the end of the post-colonial state as we knew it in Algeria. Massive calls for reform. And then in the middle of this, the Islamists that had been marginalized now begin to organize. And they had moved into the vacuum that had been created in the period. And there's a lot you can say about the Islamists in Algeria, but one of the things I would like to point out, which I think is a really important thing to remember, is that these were political Islamists. These were, by and large, people who were looking at the political process, trying to enter into a political process for the first time, because from 1962 until 1988, until effectively 1989, there was no political process in Algeria. It was a one-party, dictatorial, autocratic state that brooked absolutely no censorship. Its critics were thrown in prison. It instituted torture. We know that torture existed in the post-colonial era. This is something the Algerians do not like to talk about. We do know it existed. All these things begin to be called into question. And the group that was looked at, there were several groups that emerged. Political reformers, the Kabyle opposition, Berber opposition groups, etc. But the one that really caught the imagination of the populace for all kinds of reasons was the Islamist Party, But these were political reformers. And the, I think it's really one of the problems in talking about Algeria is people, there's a great deal of hysteria with regard to political Islam. But it's important to remember out, I think it's very important to point out that, you know, the Algerian military effectively uses the disturbances to end political Islam in the 1990s. The striking and very telling fact about this story is the fact that they effectively won. The military was able to do in the 1990s something that it really wanted to do, and its goals were the same as, and this is going to sound striking, but its goals were the same as Al-Qaeda, which is to say that neither the Algerian military state nor Al-Qaeda, which is something I want to talk about later, wanted political Islam in North Africa, but it was the one thing that emerged as a possibility. That was ended eventually because, as you know, the elections were called for, the feast, the Islamic Salvation Front, moved forward and carried the first round of the local, they carried local elections, and then in 1991, they began to emerge. They won the first round of national elections. In 1992, the Algerian state basically ended the political process, imprisoned all, in 1991 and 1992, imprisoned all the FIS opposition, put them in concentration camps in the Sahara Desert, disappeared hundreds of FIS opposition leaders, and ended political Islam thereafter. And in the wake of that, that's where the radical groups come from. Hmm. They did not emerge primarily in 1991 and 1992 as the principal force of opposition. They emerged only after the Algerian state neutralized political Islamists completely.
And this
and it's really important to remember that, because what I meant by the link between Al-Qaeda is eventually, as you know, now the radical Islamist groups in North Africa have merged with Al-Qaeda. But Al-Qaeda really tried to prevent the growth of political Islam in North Africa because everybody saw in Algeria the case that really caught the imagination for the possibility of political reform. Now, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and his men didn't want to see this happen. They didn't want to see political Islam grow because they saw political Islam as a legitimate threat to its own policies. And that's something that's really, I think, it's often misunderstood. It's because it's fairly nuanced. Mm-hmm. It's important to point out that the political Islamists were a legitimately elected political process, were legitimately elected through a political process, and they came to power through that process that was endorsed by the state. And whether or not the state had anticipated, because the FLN never expected to lose the national elections the way that it did, it was handily defeated by the Islamists as they moved into the political process.
Yeah, it's an important story for people to hear about, and probably hasn't been discussed very much, at least not since these elections took place. But what I think really disappointed a lot of people, even though maybe they might have had mixed feelings about this Islamist party, what disappointed the people is that in as much as we talk about the problem of non-democratic authoritarian regimes in this region and our interest in seeing a democratic process carried out, is that it seemed in this particular case that that's what happened. There was a democratic process carried out. The people said what they wanted. They voted for this party, and the response of the government and the military was to crack down, to set aside the result of the election and what some people I think would argue had been a golden opportunity for a positive, a peaceful, democratic transition from authoritarianism to something else was lost.
That's, I think, when you talk to most of the Algerian historians who analyze this, that's what they argue. That most Algerian historians will agree that there was an opportunity for political Islam to be tested, right? Because this was the first real emergence of a political Islamist movement in the Middle East or North Africa that would have really actually achieved power, and then after achieving power would have had to deal with the realities of holding power, and in that context would have meant that they would have had to compromise, right? And I think but the problem is we couldn't see this tested because the military stepped in arguing that these people, the Islamists, were jihadists and so on and so forth. And it's true that there were some firebrands within the feast movement, but those people were given the microphone by the state apparatus in order to magnify the image of the radical Islamist. There were plenty of moderates who were also speaking just as much about political Islam within the feast, but they weren't magnified because the feast did not control the media. And the state deliberately magnified the radical voices in order to discredit them, in order to discredit the political Islamists. And I think most Algerian historians would argue that that's what happened. And as a result of this moment that was lost, you have utter and total chaos after 1992. And then, as you know, massive questions about human rights violations emerging from how the Algerian regime dealt with the Islamists after the fact. There are all kinds of questions. And as you know, the Clinton government cut off military aid to Algeria during this conflict. George Bush, when after September 11th, was the person who jump-started military aid to North Africa, because the Algerians by 2000, the current president Bouteflika, was able to pitch the Algerian conflict in as a key part of the American war on terror, and was able to get a lot of sympathy from the U.S. foreign policymakers, et cetera, in order to yield a certain kind of attention and, to be honest, military and financial aid to Algeria, was forthcoming after the Algerians were convinced the Americans that the Americans needed to help the Algerian military hold Algeria against radical Islam. That's a really interesting part of the story. But I think I've done a lot of interviews with Algerian Islamists and so on and so forth, and I do think that the story about them is distorted. They came through a political process. Whether or not people, particularly the secularist French-speaking elite, like them, that's a different question. But they nevertheless came through a political process. They achieved power through a political process, and then had that power absolutely stripped from them by the military.
Pardon me for jumping in. We're moving into already our last about our last 20 minutes, and okay. I want to get some. Have a couple of callers here. They've been patient. I want to try to get to them. But just to bring us up to where we are right now, there have been in just recently some rioting in Algeria, and certainly people have heard about what has been going on now in the neighboring country of Tunisia, where there was a great deal of unrest, which eventually ended up driving out the president of the country. And then also we've been hearing about what's been going on in Egypt, where there have also been some demonstrations in favor of reform. So this leads one to ask this question: what is going on here? Is there some movement here across North Africa that is somehow catching fire, or is what's going on in each of these places unique to those places? And the fact that now it's happening all at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean we have something bigger going on here.
I think the thing that's not unique, the thing that's, I wouldn't say universal, but it's certainly, it cuts across the different regions, is the fact that there's so much censorship within these dictatorial Arab and Middle Eastern governments. And I think that's, I've done quite a number of interviews with people from different countries in the Middle East, and one of the things that's the overriding feature is the resentment that these people have against the censorship. And I think that I was in Tunisia, for example, and I remember very well being in Tunisia and being in a hotel, and I was asking this hotel worker about, comparing Tunisia and Algeria. And the Tunisian person said, knocked on the desk and said, "Thank God we're not Algeria, because of the civil war." Now the Algerians are saying, I wish we could be like Tunisia, because the population is back in the streets asking for reform. And I've done interviews with Egyptians, and the Egyptians will tell you straight out that these are dictatorial regimes. These are autocratic states that do not like opposition. And I think that what links them is that they're almost all like that. Look at Libya, Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, et cetera. These are not open societies for the most part in terms of opposition and the states allowing for a political process to really move forward. So I think what connects them is the exasperation of the populace, and they want reform. I think that in this moment where you see Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, play this role, and then the WikiLeaks controversy as well, I think you actually see in the part of the population now a hope that something will change. And I think there's real hope in North Africa that these autocrats will leave power. Bouteflika, for example, had the election laws changed so he can run for a third term in office. And most people see him as, if you look at the WikiLeaks documents regarding Algeria, this is corruption that stands out even among the corrupt governments there as one of the most corrupt. And this is consistent with, I heard in the preview to the to my coming on, the fact that there was just an arrest warrant for the Tunisian president. Well, that's because of the corruption. These are immensely corrupt governments. And I think that corruption is consistent across the board on all these governments, and the population sees it. They see these palaces, they see the Mercedes, they see this wealth that's being generated and produced by the country that's going to a very select group of people who run the government.
Well, we have, as I say, we're talking this morning with James Lesueur. He's professor of history at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. As a scholar, he's interested in French colonial history and also in contemporary Algerian history. And that's what we're talking about here is Algeria today. We have maybe about 10, 15 minutes left. We have some callers. We'll try to get them in. We hope they can help us by being brief. So we'll get right to it and to Effingham, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting. My comment and a question is the what your guest is describing is patriarchal overwhelming of the entire human population and everything else underneath it. And the colonial process, which is when it is overthrown in the places that he has described, is then began to the same colonial practices as it was in Vietnam are then put into focus again and power by those who survived the colonial departure and then visit the same stuff upon the population again and all that means and the exploitation of them and the few at the top who have the power. And then I won't go ahead only with this, that the very same things you've described here are in effect in Zimbabwe. Thank you.
Well, okay. I don't know. You probably don't know much more than I do about Zimbabwe, but anything else that you want to say about what the caller had to say, particularly I'm sure a lot of people would share this frustration that in so many places the hope for change simply wasn't fulfilled.
Well, I think Zimbabwe is interesting because, Zimbabwe emerged from a colonial process as well. And, during apartheid, Zimbabwe was one of the greatest supporters of the ANC. And then that actually is kind of an interesting question because it brings out the debate over Mugabe and support, for example, within Mbeki's government or Mandela's government that refused to take a position on Mugabe, who for most people's position was corrupt and was causing a lot of hardship for his people. And then had to deal with resettlement for white settlers and the land that was taken from white settlers, et cetera. There's a whole policy in Zimbabwe, and Mugabe's government is one of those governments that, again, it emerges from a colonial process, and then, like the caller just identified, it institutionalizes the kinds of problems that the previous colonial government had brought on the colonized. Now, what's different about Algeria is, it wasn't because it was malice. It wasn't because it was, just total corruption. These people really believed in the nationalist ideal. The problem was that they were they they were generating a nationalism that was imaginary in many cases. The experience of the brutality of the French colonial war in North Africa has to be underlined because the French were ruthless. This is a government that perfected and institutionalized torture and then eventually taught disappearance to the governments in Latin America. The French government did. You know, it outsourced its torturers to Latin America and taught, literally set up schools for torturing of Latin Americans to the junta government. So I think that, you know, when you talk about the efforts to kind of overcome the violence of colonialism, it's never really fully been achieved, and that's because colonialism caused so much damage to the population and introduced almost a kind of, I don't know, if France Fanon would argue, a kind of psychosis, where it's difficult to emerge from that because everything is about that experience of the violence of colonialism, and then it has to be met with an equal ontological violence, and it's a difficult thing to get out of. And I think that process of projecting onto the population the kinds of abuse that the colonizers did to the colonized is something that's in play throughout the entire world when they move from colonialism to post-colonialism. So I think that the call is right to identify that as one of the interesting issues that's at play.
All right, let's talk with someone in Coles County. They're next. Line one. Hello.
Yes, just two things very quickly. Number one, about 40 years ago, I saw the great movie The Battle of Algiers, and it's a great movie. I'm wondering what he thinks, what some of his comments might be about the classic movie The Battle of Algiers. Number two,
right.
I'm just curious what the in today's Algeria, what the approximate population is of French, what the percentage of French, what you call European French, are today in Algeria. And that's it.
All right.
Okay. The Battle of Algiers, that's a great question. And I think going back to how we started the discussion about the film, when the Battle of Algiers screened in the Venice Film Festival, the French delegation walked out. In other words, there was controversy in 1966 when it was filmed. There was controversy in 1965 when it was filmed in Algiers. And Pontecorvo, you know, there's a debate about whether or not, you know, he abused the person who actually wrote the script for that, because he didn't properly credit him, and there were financial improprieties that were conducted. But nonetheless, what's really important about that film is how it was used. And remember that in 2003, when the Pentagon was gearing up for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, it screened the film, and then that screening of that film then caused a debate in the U.S. And then it renewed interest in the Battle of Algiers, and it was reproduced in a three-volume box set. So the Battle of Algiers has kind of recirculated, but the Battle of Algiers was used. I used to know some of the Black Panthers, and it was used by the Black Panthers as a training film. It was used. It was used by training films by guerrilla forces around the world, and how you fight urban guerrilla warfare. But again, it's an artistic representation. It's not a documentary. And that gets back to the question of, like, the role of art in discussing these kinds of issues. And I think that that's actually a really interesting phenomenon. Now, the question of French, I'm actually not sure how many French still live there. It's very, very sparse numbers of Europeans stayed. In fact, one of the really interesting examples of the French who stay is a man named Henri Alleg. And I've written about Henri Alleg a little bit. And Henri Alleg was arrested by the French in the Battle of Algiers. He was tortured. He published a very famous book called La Question. And then he was one of the few French people who went back to Algeria after independence. That's after being tortured by the French. And he goes back to Algeria. But what's striking about and he goes back to Algeria in 1962 in order to recreate the free press under the Ben Bella government. But it's striking because when the Battle of Algiers was filmed, it was filmed in the summer of 1965, and that's precisely when the coup d'état came into place, when Boumediene overthrew the Ben Bella government. And Henri Alleg, a Frenchman who went back to help regenerate civil society in Algeria, and really did it bravely, had to flee Algeria because the Algerian government was institutionalizing torture and had put him on a list of people to be tortured and captured. So very few French I would argue, very few. I mean, there were lots of people who went there as part of their service in the French civil service to help the Algerian state recreate itself. And there was a lot of dialogue and a lot of effort on the part of French to, you know, they sent the engineers and so on and so forth to help recreate the architecture necessary for a civil society, like the physical architecture as well. So there has been a continued relationship between France and Algeria, but the degree to which French people stayed is very, very, it's an understudied thing, but it's also, I think, it's a very small, very small portion of the population.
All right. Well, I'm glad that actually the caller raised the issue of the film Battle of Algiers. It's a very famous movie, and I think that if people haven't seen it, it would be a great thing to seek out. It's a very interesting movie. It's a movie that's in black and white, and it has it has the feel of a documentary, although it's not a documentary. It's a
right.
dramatic film. But I think what's really striking about it, as you say, is that people keep coming back to it because the themes of the movie, the questions that it raises, particularly when we're talking about a kind of urban warfare that we continue to see, the questions raised by the movie keep coming up. And so that's why it is that people keep going back and watching it.
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, I've shown the film for the last 15 years since I've been teaching this subject. And I showed it before the Pentagon reissued it. What's striking about it is, I mean, I've seen it probably literally 50 or 60 times because I show it so much. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting representation of the conflict. It's based on someone's true story. And in fact, what's really interesting about this film, a couple things that are really really interesting is they actually used the real characters. They were the real revolutionaries, except for at the end, one of the characters who gets killed. He's obviously not playing himself, but their characters are the true characters. They're the real people who fought in the war, except for the street people. But they're the real revolutionaries. So it's a really interesting film. But it suggests a moment of self-criticism, too, because the Algerians were susceptible in that moment in 1965 to some measure of self-criticism because they were talking about their faults, the call to strike. They saw that in the film. It's a key part of what happens for the disruption of the nationalist movement, because they physically go into the streets and they strike, and that helps the French identify the people who are striking. In other words, the people who are sympathetic to nationalism, mm-hmm. and helps the French crack down on them. So there are really big lessons that are learned in it. But one of the things that's really interesting is the French reaction. You know, it was banned in France. There was street protests and so on and so forth about this film. And it is a hugely controversial film, kind of like these things. But what's interesting to me, again, going back to this question of art, is that somehow art brings this out. People have something to say, and I think that's kind of a great thing, that people are debating it. Because in Algeria, for example, you're not allowed to debate these kinds of things. The state has specific laws prohibiting inquiries into the state's violations, the possible human rights violations in Algeria in the 1990s. You can't do it. It's forbidden, constitutionally forbidden. So there are all kinds of things that are really interesting. So art is one of the ways you can do this, and I think that's why there's so many books and movies made about this subject.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, and my apologies. Someone has written in an email here that I should have tried to get in a little bit earlier. Maybe you can talk for a minute about the listener is interested in the conflict between the Kabyle people, the Berber people, and the Algerian government.
Right. Yeah, that's been an ongoing conflict. And the Berbers, for good reason, have felt they've been marginalized since independence. Their language wasn't officially recognized until very recently as an official language. Arabic was expected to be taught in Kabylia to Berbers. And the Berbers kind of viewed this kind of like the South African blacks and colors do in South Africa, which is they don't want to learn Afrikaans. They don't see it as being their language. And there was tremendous resentment on the part of the Berbers for the imposing of Arabic instruction on that region, because that's not their language. But that's, again, part of this debate. And within Algeria, this just triggers more debate, because some Algerians will say, well, the Berbers are disruptive. They're trying to undo the nationalist momentum, they're being divisive and those kinds of things. And the Berbers will say, well, you're being autocratic. You're not listening to us. We want our own regional ethnicity. We have our own languages and so on and so forth. And it's been a key part of the debate in the post-colonial era, basically since 1962.
Wait, just now to finish up, can you talk for 30 seconds about what you see happening here in Algeria in the near future?
Well, I don't think anything's going to happen unless there's a real significant reform. Bouteflika's been in power for a long time. He's not going to leave power. His government is, most Algerians would say, that there's so much corruption there that it's impossible to call for reform unless the government was replaced. And this is a government that weathered the storm of political Islam. It was able to undo the momentum that political Islamists had gained and basically demonize the Islamists. They were successful in that. And their partnership with the U.S. only further alienated the Islamists from the political process in Algeria. So I'm not sure that there's going to be – I mean, it's difficult to see because in 1988, this was already tried. In Algeria, there was an overturning of the government. There was complete end of the FLN, the introduction of a multi-party system, et cetera. Hopefully, maybe 20 years later, roughly, there will be a chance for reform. But it's desperately called for, and a lot of people want to see it happen.
Our guest in this hour of Focus, James Lesser, is professor of history at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He is a scholar of contemporary Algerian history. And one book that you might look at if you're interested in reading on the subject is his book, Between Terror and Democracy, Algeria Since 1989. Zed is the publisher. Professor Lesser, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.